Well, as you know, on Wednesday nights, particularly on Wednesday nights, we go through the Bible chapter by chapter, verse by verse, and we have come to Judges chapter 9. Please turn there in your Bible. And let me just say that this is a difficult chapter. It's a difficult chapter. First, it's long, but we're gonna plow through this as quickly as we can. And secondly, things are going down in the nation of Israel. Things will always go in a downward direction when we do not give God the place that he deserves. And especially for this nation, God is supposed to be their king. And of course, God is very capable of ruling over them. But if you reject that rule, you're going to be in trouble. Listen, not only as a nation, you're going to be in trouble individually. It's one or the other. Either God rules your life or your flesh rules your life. And if you choose the flesh, or if you just allow the flesh to take over, the net result is never good. It might be okay for a while, as we will see tonight. You know, there is a period of time where things seem to be going okay. But I'll tell you, if your flesh is allowed to stay on the throne of your life, it has the very real potential of destroying your life. Isn't that amazing? Your flesh? I mean, how close does that get? We live in this body of flesh. We have a fleshly nature. Thankfully, if you're a believer tonight, you have God's nature, the divine nature. You have that. And so we can choose which nature is going to be the governing, ruling element in my life. Well, let's look at Judges chapter 9. Then Abimelech, the son of Jerubbabel, went to Shechem. Now remember, Jerubbabel is just another name for Gideon. This is Gideon's son, but Gideon apparently had a lot of wives. I mean, you'd have to have a lot of wives, right, to have 70 children? Yeah, I think so. But this was not, this son, Abimelech, as we saw in our previous study, was not born to one of his wives. He was born to a concubine, a member of Abimelech's harem. And it's just helpful to know that this woman who birthed this young man, Abimelech, whose name means my father is a king, which is kind of a strange name for Abimelech because his father, Gideon, turned that down. You remember what he said. The men of Israel said to Gideon, rule over us, both you and your son and your grandson. In other words, establish a dynasty, Gideon, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian. But Gideon said to them, I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. Unfortunately, sadly, tragically, Gideon, as the judge of Israel, as the one who God used to bring deliverance from the oppression of the Midianites, Gideon never established a place for the God of the Bible in the national life of Israel. And when there is a spiritual vacuum, whether it is at a national level or whether it is a personal level, something's going to rush in and fill that vacuum. So, Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem to his mother's brothers. So, you remember, Gideon lived in Orpha. That's where he lived. But this woman that birthed Abimelech, she lived in Shechem. Now, Shechem was a city where there were a lot of Jews, but there were also a lot of Canaanites. And there were also Shechemites. And these Shechemites go way back to the patriarchs. You remember Jacob, specifically Jacob's sons. You know, they actually committed an atrocity in Shechem. Later on, Shechem became a very spiritual site for the children of Israel. It was on Mount Gerizim, not far from Shechem, where the blessings were pronounced that Moses had commanded them to pronounce when they got into the promised land. It was there in Shechem where Abraham first made this, you know, had this encounter with God at the Oak of Mamre. That's where we believe that was. And so this is a key city. And, you know, this is where Abimelech is, and he approaches the men of Shechem, and he says, "Which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal reign over you, or that one reign over you? Remember that I am your own flesh and blood." Now, somebody should have said, "I beg your pardon, your dad said nobody was going to rule over us. Not you, for sure." But nobody said that because they're not in dad's town. They're in Shechem. And Shechem's a little bit different than Orpha. Oh, I get so confused with that name. "And his mother's brothers spoke all these words concerning him in the hearing of all the men of Shechem. And their heart was inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, 'He's our brother.' So they gave him 70 shekels of silver from the temple of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless men, and they followed him." You know, if this was being written today, they would say he hired a bunch of terrorists, because that's what these guys are, and that's what essentially Abimelech is, as we will see. Now, you notice that there in Shechem, there was a temple to Baal. It sounds like that's pretty much who they're worshiping now, which is a huge disappointment. But what did I just say? If you leave a spiritual vacuum, well, don't be surprised that people worship idols or create their own idols. That's what's going on here. Now, here's the atrocity, the tragedy that haunts this entire chapter. "Then he went to his father's house at Orpha and killed his brothers, the 70 sons of Jerubbaal, on one stone." So apparently he snuck up on them, took them captive, and they were all killed. The guy's a terrorist. "But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left because he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, all of Beth Milo, and they went and made Abimelech king beside the terebinth tree at the pillar that was in Shechem." Now, again, Bible scholars believe this was the key place, the place where Joshua gave his final speech to the children of Israel, the place where Jacob buried the family gods when he came back into the land, the place where Abraham first heard from God and built an altar. This was a key place, And now they've turned it into a place where they're going to have a coronation for this butcher. And when they told Jotham, that was probably, you know, one of the 70. Actually, there were 69 sons that were killed. This guy got away. He went and stood on top of Mount Gerizim. And as I told you, that's the place where the blessings were pronounced. And lifted his voice and cried out. And he said to them, now, as I read this, understand that this is the first parable in the Bible. You say, wait a minute, I thought the parables were in the New Testament. Well, there are parables in the New Testament, but there's also parables in the Old Testament. Now, I think we all understand that a parable, first of all, is presented in such a way that one thing means another. You're trying to drive home a spiritual truth. You're trying to drive home a moral lesson, and you want to make sure that everybody understands it. So instead of using spiritual jargon, you're going to use something that people immediately know what that is, and then they understand that this object that becomes the subject of the parable is conveying to them a truth that where that object represents something else. I hope you got that. For example, you remember that story where the prophet Nathan, he comes to David. David has been shutting out God. David has sinned big time. I mean, we are talking the breaking of major commandments, including adultery, including murder. And he's committed these horrible sins before the Lord, broken these commandments, and God sends a prophet to him. You remember that story? He tells David about this man that has this little pet lamb, comes in and, has dinner with the family. I mean, just very, very coveted, very precious. And what happens is the rich guy next door that has all kinds of lambs, all kinds of lambs. I started to say all kinds of lamb chops. That wasn't flocks and herds. He has plenty, and he is entertaining a visitor. A visitor has come, and he says, you know what? I'm going to go next door, take my neighbor. He can't stop me. I'm going to just take that little lamb, and we're going to kill that and eat it. And he tells David that story. And David, he's already harboring some emotions that he's bottled up inside. And he just explodes. And he says, that man shall surely die. What did Nathan say? He said, thou art the man, David. So, parable. Now, we have a parable here. Here's Jotham. Here's Shechem down here. They're installing their new king, this terrorist. And Jotham is on the top of Mount Gerizim, and they look up there, and they can probably barely recognize him, and he makes this pronouncement by way of a parable, and he says, listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees, okay, so this, we're getting into the parable here. You'll see what trees are representative of. The trees once went forth to appoint a king over them. And they said to the olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, should I cease giving my oil with which they honor God and men and go to sway over trees? Then the trees said to the fig tree, you come and reign over us. But the fig tree said to them, shall I cease my sweetness and my good fruit and go to sway over trees? Then the trees said to the vine, you come and reign over us. But the vine said to them, should I cease my new wine, which cheers both God and men, and go to sway over trees? So the trees are responding. God has put us here, the various trees, the olive tree, the vine, and we are fulfilling our God-given purpose, and that purpose in one way or another is to produce fruit. So all the trees said to the bramble, "You come and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees, "If in truth you anoint me as a king over you, then come and take shelter in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon." Couple things here. We're city folk. We're not that familiar with bramble. A bramble is sort of like an overgrown weed, something like a tumbleweed. First of all, you're not going to get any shade out of a bramble. You're not going to get any protection out of a bramble. You're not going to get much of anything out of a bramble except they burn very easily. And that would happen during the hot seasons there in that mid-eastern country of Israel. Sometimes they would catch fire and there'd be a big bramble fire, but that's about all they're good for. They're not good for anything else. They're not going to give you any shade. They're sure not going to give you any protection. Now, therefore, verse 16, if you have acted in truth and sincerity in making Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house and have done to him as he deserves, for my father fought for you, risked his life, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian, but you have risen up against my father's house this day and killed his 70 sons on one stone and made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If you have acted in truth and sincerity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come from the men of Shechem and from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. So this parable presenting Abimelech as a bramble, as a tumbleweed, is prophetic because we're going to see exactly the very thing that is said here. It's going to happen. So Jotham ran away. I bet he did. And fled. And he went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his brother, after Abimelech had reigned over Israel 3 years. Now notice, for 3 years, you know, things are okay. Things are fine. But after the 3 years, God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the crime done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might be settled, and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and the men of Shechem, who aided him in the killing of his brothers. I'm sure there were people that said, wait, what Abimelech did to those sons of Gideon? What's God doing? Now, there's another question to ask, and that question is, what were they doing? I mean, why didn't the nation of Israel rise up and take this guy Abimelech along with his little gang of terrorists and execute them for what they had done? The treachery and the murders that they had committed. I'll tell you something. Often, leaders are just a reflection of the people that they lead. The reason they didn't do anything is because they had become much like Abimelech themselves. You see, that's what happens when you begin to consort with false gods. That's what happens when you entertain idols and you get into those different kinds of practices that your idol dictates. The flesh takes over and brings you to a very low level. But God had not forgotten. God was watching the whole situation, and he's going to deal with Abimelech. So it says, the crime done to the 70 and the men of Shechem, verse 25, the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him on the tops of the mountains, and they robbed all who passed by them along the way, and it was told Abimelech. So what is being said here is that these traders that would come through Shechem, they would pay a tariff. You know, these traders would have these camel trains, and they're carrying goods through that area. And in order to get through the area, they got to stop and they got to pay a toll. But they were saying, "Wait a minute, we're not going this way anymore, because there's no security, and we're getting ripped off. Every time we come through here, we get robbed." So the revenue coming to Abimelech stopped, and another opportunist shows up. His name is Gaal. Gaal, the son of Ebed, came with his brothers and went over to Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. So they went out into the fields and gathered grapes from their vineyards and trod them and made merry. And they went into the house of their god and ate and drank and cursed Abimelech. So that's to be expected. They're all drunk. They're all, thinking, we got a new guy in town. He's going to take way better care of us. And that Abimelech, we don't like him at all. And then Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech? And who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? And is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him? If only this people were under my authority, then I would remove Abimelech." So he said to Abimelech, "Increase your army and come out." So you can kind of imagine this drunk, He's doing what drunk people do, vastly elevating and exaggerating himself. And finally, with his cup full of wine, "All right, Abimelech, increase your army. We're going to take you on." Drunk. When Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was aroused. And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly saying, "Take note, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brothers have come to Shechem. And here they are fortifying the city against you. Now, therefore, get up by night, you and the people who are with you, and lie in wait in the field. And it shall be as soon as the sun is up in the morning that you shall rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may then do to them as you find opportunity." So Abimelech and all the people who were with him rose by night and lay in wait against Shechem in four companies. When Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance to the city gate, Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from lying in wait. And so Gaal is out there, he's drinking his coffee, another morning. He saw the people. And he said to Zebul, "Look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains." Zebul said to him, "Oh, you see the shadows of the mountains as if they were men." So Gaal says, "Well, yeah, maybe so." Takes another sip of coffee. So Gaal spoke again and said, see, no, people are coming down from the center of the land. And another company is coming from the diviner's terebinth tree. Then Zebul said to him, where indeed is your mouth now? And which you said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the people whom you despised? There they are. Didn't you say, Zebul, bring your army out, Abimelech? Remember he said that. Go out, if you will, and fight with them now. So Gaal went out, leading the men of Shechem, and fought with Abimelech. I mean, what else could he do? He's kind of trapped, isn't he? Can't really run away because they'll chase him down. He can't go back into Shechem and hide. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled from him, and many fell wounded to the very entrance of the gate. Then Abimelech dwelt at Arumah, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his brothers so that they would not dwell in Shechem. And it came about on the next day that the people went out into the field, and they told Abimelech. So he took his people, divided them into three companies. So you get the picture, right? Abimelech goes home, comes back the next day to finish this all up. And he took his people, divided them into three companies, and lay in wait in the field. And he looked, and there were the people coming out of the city, and he rose against them and attacked them. Then Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city, and the other two companies rushed upon all who were in the fields and killed them. So Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He took the city and killed the people who were in it, and he demolished the city and sowed it with salt. When that happens, that pretty much means that the city's not going to be a city anymore. It's sown with salt. Nothing can grow. Now, when all the men of the Tower of Shechem had heard that, they entered the stronghold of the temple of the god Berith. And it was told Abimelech that all the men of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. Then Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the people who were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bough from the trees and took it and laid it on his shoulder. And he said to the people who were with him, what you have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done. So each of the people likewise cut down his own bough and followed Abimelech, put them against the stronghold, and set the stronghold on fire above them, so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem died, about 1,000 men and women. Then Abimelech went to Thebez. Now Thebez is nearby, and they apparently were allied with Shechem. And he encamped against Thebez and took it. But there was a strong tower in the city, and all the men and women, all the people of the city, fled there and shut themselves in. Then they went up to the top of the tower. So Abimelech came as far as the tower and fought against it. And he drew near the door of the tower to burn it with fire. But a certain woman dropped an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Then he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, draw your sword and kill me, lest men say of me, a woman killed him. So his young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed, every man to his place. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem, God returned on their own heads, and on them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Zerubbabel. Not a pleasant story. sad what the nation of Israel had become. They paid scant attention to what Gideon had done for them. They turned completely away from the Lord. Interesting that they ran and took refuge in the temple of Baal. And some people believe that that is what they called earlier in the chapter, Beth Milo. And Beth Milo was some kind of fortified building adjacent to the temple, and it is believed that the elders of the city, the top citizens of the city, lived there, and they are referred to in the parable as the cedars of Lebanon, you know, the big trees, the tall trees. And all of that God prophesied and predicted. And we see the nation of Israel plunging deeper and deeper, getting away from God. Now, we're going to stop here. I will tell you, if you read chapter 10, there's kind of a brief time where they stabilize a bit, but it's just going to get worse. And the reason it gets worse is because over and over again, the nation of Israel, whether it is a specific region or whether it is a number of tribes, they just turn away from the Lord. You know, God, you're not going to rule over us. What an irony that a nation would turn away from the God who had so extravagantly blessed them in their past. What an amazing thing, a mystery really, that the God who had bailed them out over and over and over again, delivered them from enemies that had come into the nation to just oppress them. They cried out that the Lord God would deliver them, and they would go right back to Baal. Right back to these Canaanite idols. And here we are in another time of history looking at that and saying, how stupid. Why would they as a people do that? But you know, I think there is an analogy to be seen with the very issue of our own flesh. You know, the Bible says, walk in the Spirit so that you don't fulfill the lust of the flesh. But there's a lot of people, they just can't seem to bring that into their daily behavior, even though in their heart, they know that's what they need to do. They know the Scripture is so accurate and so true. The flesh, if you entertain the flesh, if you let the flesh rule over your life, okay, it might be all right for a year or two or three. That's pretty generous. Because usually the works of the flesh and the consequences they bring into our life show up sooner rather than later. So if there is a New Testament truth to be seen for us tonight in this chapter, is don't create a vacuum in your life where you have pushed God aside. You know, it's one thing to believe in God. You know what it says in the book of James? The demons believe in Jesus. Are they Christians? No. And there are people, they believe in Jesus. They might even profess to be followers of Jesus Christ, but their works of the flesh and the behavior that brings forth betrays them. Listen, If you are a true follower of Jesus, if you are a disciple of Jesus Christ, if you are a Christian, your life will reflect that. If you're just one that professes that, but in reality, you really pay very little attention to the Lord at all as far as the daily details of your life are concerned, your life will indicate that as well. So, the moral of the story is tonight, give Jesus that place of lordship. Give him the first place in your life. Honor him, and he will honor you. Live for him, and you will reap the rewards. Did you notice that Abimelech reaped what he sowed? He went there and picked some stone and, you know, lined these guys up and killed them on this stone. But what happened to him? He got crowned with a great big stone that broke his crown, so to speak. So listen, don't sow to the flesh, because that's what you're going to reap. You sow to the Spirit, oh my goodness, you will reap blessings. Your flesh will be protesting all the way. Hey, come on, you know, throw something this way. Come on, please. No, don't sow to the flesh. The flesh will deceive you. The flesh will lie to you. The flesh is deceitful. It follows after the dictates of our wicked and deceitful heart. You know, thank God that I have Jesus in my life as a cover. Thank God that I have Jesus in my life that protects me from the wicked and deceitful heart that is in all of us. With the life and through the life of Jesus, you can prevail. But if you push that influence away and don't pay any attention to it, you just need to remember the result of this story. Abimelech says, I'm going to be the king. But he ended up a dead king. And we see why. We reap what we sow. Let's sow to the Spirit.